Hey everybody, this is Paul Douglas Boyer here for Madman Machine episode 187 for Tuesday, May 15th, 2012. Well, I'm excited to tell you that I've got a new book coming out in 4 months. It's going to appear at Amazon and other places on the 225th anniversary of the United States Constitution being signed in Philadelphia. That is September 17th. And the book is going to be called The Original Counter-Argument. And I will read you the preface and background for it shortly. The Madman Machine is all about economic freedom, and tied in with economic freedom is individual freedom. And the founders were very concerned about that. Doing a whole lot of podcasts is I've been doing a whole lot of writing. I started last September working on this book and really felt called to write it. Like I mentioned, the Madman Machine Show is the whole idea behind this podcast is to figure out a way to achieve financial freedom for ourselves. If you've been tuning in, you may realize that I think I've figured out a way to achieve financial freedom. And there's not much else to talk about financial freedom. Invest it the four ways that you're supposed to in the permanent portfolio and set it and forget it and don't worry about it. Be free! Be financially free! Work, make money, invest it in the four assets and go on and be free. Well, there's some things still that we're not free about. Because people want to take some of our hard earnings away from us. I got a bill for my real estate the other day. Holy cow! It goes up every year even though real estate values are going down. My tax burden continues going up. And then, of course, there's the threats to our economic freedom because of the overarching national and coming global governments. Well, in trying to figure out all about this economic freedom and individual freedom, I've been doing a lot of reading. You know, starting with the America's Great Documents, Constitution, of course, and then learned about the Federalist Papers and starting reading about those. And those are documents, essays, which I'll explain a little bit more about later, very much promoting the Constitution. Well, I came across something called the Anti-Federalist Papers. Why would anybody be opposed to the Constitution? Started reading those, very difficult to read. It turns out some of their arguments in there make sense. And that's when I felt called to make their arguments more widely available to the everyday reader. And that's what my book coming out is all about, called The Original Counter-Argument. Now, I have to be upfront with you about where the name comes from. Turns out, middle of last year, 2011, a book came out called The Original Argument. It was written by a college student originally, but he basically sold it to Glenn Beck, and Glenn Beck published it under his name. It is a paraphrasing of some of the Federalist Papers, and it became a New York Times best-selling book. The Original Argument. And the subtitle for that is The Federalist Case for the Constitution Adapted for the 21st Century. Well, since my book is the Anti-Federalist Papers, it is called The Original Counter-Argument, and the subtitle is, and take a deep breath here, The Founders' Case Against the Constitution and Warnings of Despotism adapted for the 21st century. I've got in there about 29 or 30 different writings, letters, essays, and speeches from the other founders. And they are brilliant. And they are worth reading. And I'm excited to get these out to you. The book will be released September 17th. Again, that's the 225th anniversary of the signing of the Constitution. Now, it turns out the signing of the Constitution was just the beginning. They had to go through a ratification process, which took, I guess, almost a year to get through the needed 9 states. Some states ratified very quickly. Other states took their time, good old time, in ratifying. And at the beginning of each letter, essay, speech in my book, I kind of give you the timeline. These are presented chronologically. I give you the timeline of which states had ratified and how close they were getting to making the U.S. Constitution the law of the land. It's very, very, very interesting reading. I hope that you will get a copy. I intend on making a paperback version of it and publishing an ebook. I'm not sure whether I'm going to create an audiobook of it or not. I may create an audiobook, but that might come out a little later than September 17th. But you can pre-order it from Amazon. Just simply do a search for original counter argument. So I'm going to read for you the preface to the book and give you the background chapter to get you started. Here we go. You're about to read some of the most important writings from America's founders. Important, but forgotten. It's the greatest case of "to the victor go the spoils" in American history. The advocates of the United States Constitution won, narrowly, and the counter-argument of the opponents became the losing argument, and up until now, the lost argument, much to our loss. Why would anyone be opposed to the Constitution? And who were they? A couple of the names of these opponents will be familiar: George Mason and Patrick Henry. George Mason for his namesake university's winning basketball team, and Patrick Henry for saying, "Give me liberty or give me death." But how many people know that they were opposed to the U.S. Constitution? And does anyone know their reasons for opposing it? They will after reading this book. The other founders in this book may be less familiar, but they also gave their voice to a variety of different objections to the Constitution and warnings about giving a national government unlimited power. Included here are some of the most widely read, most significant, and most famous essays, speeches, and letters from the opponents of the Constitution at the time. These writings deserve a much wider audience. They help us know the intended direction for federated republican government and warn us about a national government growing out of control. Knowing how we got here requires knowing where we've been. The U.S. as it stands today would certainly be unrecognizable to the founders in 1787, not just because the U.S. today has 78 times as many people as it did then, but because the federal government probably has 1,000 times more power than what even the fiercest nationalist at the time could have imagined. In these pages, you'll get an idea of just how bitterly the founders fought over giving power to the new national government. How much more bitterly would they have fought if they had known where we would end up today? I had heard that the three most important documents in America's history are the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and the Federalist Papers. So after reading the first two, I dutifully grabbed a copy of the Federalist Papers, a free copy downloaded to my iPhone, and started reading. I got to about the third paragraph and gave up. This wasn't reading, after all. It was a laborious translation process. Those guys, 225 years ago, sure had a way with words. Fortunately, I came across some versions of the Federalist Papers that had been rephrased for the 21st century. Making these important essays much easier to read was a great idea. But the Federalist Papers only tell one side of the story. Another very important side to it was completely missing. I immediately set out to tell that other side. This is their story. It is not my goal to make a commentary or a study on the founders here. You'll find in reading these essays that it's better to let them speak for themselves. I've included some introductory material prior to each essay in order to set the necessary context for the work. I've also included some key points after each essay to help the reader see and remember things at a glance. But I do not make an interpretation of their works beyond their actual words. Once you've read and understood their rephrased works, you can find interpretations of them in many, many other good sources, some of which are listed in a bibliography at the end of this book. After becoming familiar with the author's ideas in these rephrased essays, I encourage readers to seek out the original sources, all of which are in the public domain and available through an internet search. There's no substitute for their flowery use of the language. But knowing firsthand how difficult it can be to read some of their letters, essays, and speeches, I felt called to rephrase them. Untangling some of their endless sentences was often as difficult as tracing the logic in a dozen nested software subroutines. There were many sentences that I would stare at for an hour, trying every key to unlock its meaning until one finally clicked. I continue to be amazed at how the words from the past can look the same as those we use today, but have different meanings and dramatically different combinations. This book contains a selection of the writings and speeches of the opponents of the new Constitution, with one entry for each of the major authors, including Brutus, Cato, Sentinel, Federal Farmer, Agrippa, an old Whig, Philadelphiaensis, Melancton Smith, and Luther Martin, as well as widely republished works from other important founders such as Patrick Henry, George Mason, Edmund Randolph, Elbridge Gerry, and Mercy Otis Warren. My hope is that I've made these important works readable, enjoyable, and informative. They contain valuable lessons that we today should unlock once again for the good of we the people, or as Patrick Henry says in his speech, we the states. Some grammatical quirks from the original sources, such as excessive commas or wild use of dashes, semicolons, and colons, remain in the text in order to keep the spirit of the imperfection of the works. The capitalization of the words was especially inconsistent at the time and remains so here. The writings are presented chronologically. However, even though some of these particular essays are among the most widely reprinted of the opposition writings, not all of the writings were readily available in all localities at the time. Background. After the Declaration of Independence in 1776, the 13 former American colonies of Great Britain had become independent states. Each state operated under its own government with its own constitution attending to the needs of its own people. But the relationships between the states were experiencing growing pains under the relatively new Articles of Confederation. Formally known as the Articles of Confederation and Perpetual Union, it was adopted by all 13 states in March 1781 and was the first constitution for the United States. The Confederation government was designed as a very thin layer on top of the state governments to provide for a common defense and foreign policy and to help facilitate commerce between the states. It was not a national government, but was instead a league of friendship between the states. The powers given to this confederation were strictly limited to those explicitly stated in the articles. It had some problems. In September 1786, 12 delegates from 5 states met in Annapolis to discuss faults in the Articles of Confederation and to repair commerce between the states. Among them were James Madison and Edmund Randolph from Virginia and Alexander Hamilton from New York. Their report said, "There are important defects in the system of federal government." They called for a convention to be held the following May to be attended by delegates from all states for the purpose of revising the Articles of Confederation. 74 delegates from the various states were chosen to attend the federal convention in Philadelphia. 19 of those delegates declined their appointments, including Patrick Henry, who appears later in this book. Of the remaining 55 who did attend the convention, 13 left early without signing, including Robert Yates and John Lansing, whose letter explaining their early departure appears in these pages. Of the remaining 42 who stayed until the end, Three refused to sign the new constitution: George Mason, Elbridge Gerry, and Edmund Randolph, all of whom have letters that are included here explaining their opposition. On September 17, 1787, 39 delegates signed the Constitution, or 53% of the originally chosen delegates. As you will see, the new direction that the country was about to take was anything but unanimous. The Constitution was sent to the states for ratification, with a copy delivered to the Continental Congress, who were meeting in New York. Instead of following the Articles of Confederation and requiring that all 13 states agree to the new Constitution, the framers sent a letter with instructions requiring only 9 of the 13 states ratify it in order to create the new government. Notably, they did not require the existing Congress or the state legislatures to ratify it. Instead, they asked for a special ratifying convention in each state to be attended by delegates chosen by the people of each state. Copies of the new Constitution began making their way into the hands of the public. Finally, the public could read it for themselves and weigh its advantages and disadvantages over their existing state governments and the Confederation of States. There was no shortage of opinion on the matter. They wrote their opinions in letters to friends, newspaper essays, and gave speeches on courthouse steps and at ratifying conventions. Some of these letters, essays, and speeches were widely circulated in newspapers. A number of the essays continued as a series and were later printed together as pamphlets. Essays were frequently authored under a pseudonym to hide the identity of the author. The essay by Philadelphia Insys later in this book explains why pseudonyms were used. One such series of writings is the Federalist Papers, which contain 85 essays in total. These essays promoting the Constitution appeared in New York newspapers and were authored under the pen name Publius. Readers at the time did not know that Publius was the collaboration of Alexander Hamilton, James Madison, and John Jay. The supporters of the Constitution took the name Federalists for themselves, even though Nationalists might have been more accurate since they were in favor of creating a national government. They saddled their opponents with the unfriendly sounding name Anti-Federalists. Ironically, a more accurate name for the Anti-Federalists would have been Federalists, since they were more in favor of a confederation of states yielding a federated government. The opponents to creating a national government had a variety of reasons for their opposition. You will discover those reasons in these letters, essays, and speeches that follow. Even though the Federalists won their debate and got the Constitution ratified, the contributions of the Anti-Federalists remain very important. Without them, Publius would not have felt the urgency to write the Federalist Papers. Without them, the Bill of Rights might not have been amended to the Constitution. Without them, we would not have these important, prescient writings to warn us about the dangers of too much power in the hands of too few people. All right, so there you have it, the preface and the background chapters from my new book, The Original Counterargument, September 17th, 2012. Now, today is May 15th. Tomorrow, May 16th, that is the 225th anniversary of the first essay that I'll include in the book. The essay is by an anonymous author who simply goes by the letter Z, published in a Philadelphia newspaper. And he kicks the ball off by saying why he is opposed to creating this national government. I'm going to publish a little bit about the article by Z on my other website, planetboyer.com. And I may be directing you to some other places as the time gets closer. But look at Planet Boyer for more information about the upcoming book, The Original Counterargument. I thank you so very much for listening. This has been Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes the original counterargument to make a mad money machine. Have a happy summer, everybody.